Our West Texas borderland has found its way into high-profile film and television projects, as well as countless indie productions. Most of that work would have started with a call to the El Paso Film Commission. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. For over three decades, when someone wanted to make a movie or television show in El Paso, their first call was to Susie Gaines, El Paso's film commissioner. Gaines will be retiring next week, and I'm happy to have her on the program today.
Thank you, Charles. Good morning.
It's been a few years, but
yes. How
could I resist an exit interview with you? You have so many stories to tell. Three decades. How many years exactly has it been?
33.
33 years. So if I'm doing my math right, that's 1985?
Yeah.
You started as El Paso's film commissioner. Amazing. I'm thinking back to 85. That doesn't seem that long ago to me, and probably not to you either.
No, it doesn't.
But we didn't even have the internet then.
Or cell phones.
Or cell phones or digital cameras, which have revolutionized film production. Right. Those were the days when it was really hard to shoot movies. Big crews and films. I'm just wondering, looking back over those 33 years, is there any way to summarize possibly the changes you've seen? I mean, we just mentioned some of them, that technology was very different. You were probably doing faxes with production companies in L.A. You couldn't email people.
Faxes, that's right. We were doing faxes and just phone calls to the office phone.
Probably your house phone, too.
Yeah, actually. And I know that my assistant at the time was Joe Sierra, and I wouldn't see him sometimes all day because I'd have to send him out to get pictures, and that there was no communication, but strangely enough, things got done.
It is amazing, all of the technology we rely on now and what you didn't have back then.
That's right.
And the major productions that came through town. Do you remember back 85, 86, what the first major production you worked on as film commissioner?
Extreme Prejudice.
Extreme Prejudice.
Yes.
And that was shot...
And I fell in love with Nick Nolte.
Nick Nolte. And that was mostly shot here?
Yes.
Yeah. I know a lot of...
All except the very last scene.
Amazing. So how long were they here in El Paso?
Oh, gosh, probably 4 or 5 months.
So we should back up. A production comes to town for 4 or 5 months, like Extreme Prejudice or any number of other major films that were shot in and around El Paso. I imagine months before that, the phone starts ringing.
Yes.
And the amount of coordination that happens is extreme.
And it was... more difficult, obviously, because, you know, you can't, your lines would be busy. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember having a second phone installed on my desk. So, and I would be on both at the same time.
Amazing.
Trying to get things together. They blew up a little chicken restaurant that was downtown and closed. But we had to coordinate the street scenes. There was a street chase scene. It was amazing. It was amazing.
There were back in those days, New Mexico has always been a popular place to shoot films, but it did not have the kind of reputation or incentive base that it does now. I mean, it's a real powerhouse, and the infrastructure that's built up around Albuquerque is amazing. But was it easier back then to attract productions to El Paso?
Well, it was easier to do our job, which was to find locations, because it was about locations.
And locations that nobody had seen before.
Right.
On
and
film.
And be able to help them get it accomplished. You had to. You couldn't lie. Everything had to be above board because you'd have to prove it. Mm-hmm. And I loved those days. I loved that, being able to make it real. You know,
a big part of what you do is coordinate for these production companies that are coming, all the logistics and making sure that they have the locations, and you have all of the local base caterers and maybe
that's
some
right.
crew. But that's when someone seeks out El Paso and decides to come here. There's another whole side to your job, I'm sure, which was going out and promoting El Paso, maybe to people who hadn't thought of using El Paso.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what for the last 30 years plus you've been doing I guess, going to conventions and going out to L.A. Yeah, and meeting with producers.
Trade shows. The biggest – there's an association that we belong to. It's the Association of Film Commissions International, international organization that had probably 300-plus film commissions in the world. And you gather all in one place and set up your booths. And Texas always was the biggest booth, which was great. And sell your wares, you know. Sell your locations, talk to people. And word of mouth also was huge back then.
This is producers who are coming out to see all the different...
They would talk to one another because when they... When a movie would wrap, they would leave. They didn't work anymore for that company. Mm-hmm. And so if they were going on another show, there's always kind of, where were you last? How was it? You know, and El Paso has always, always rated very high there because it's always been film friendly. The people just welcome production. I could never have done my job without them.
Right. When you when you're at those trade shows or conventions and you're competing with 300 other film commissions from around the world, what are some of the things that you would say or do to set El Paso apart and try to attract people to El Paso over, say, an Albuquerque or a Georgia or a Toronto?
Well, I think the biggest selling point has always been the wide open spaces,
big sky,
the mountains. Yes, the the natural backdrops, which became very attractive, as well as it's always less expensive to film here, at least 30%. There hasn't ever been a production that was over budget, which was always huge, always huge. They were either under budget or on budget. So they and weather, they didn't have hardly any weather days where they had to extend their time. And many times when they were here, we actually were able to get more scenes done because we'd find out things that they needed and able to find
stay ahead of them,
make it happen.
Looking back over those 33 years, are there particular productions that pop out to you or challenges that you overcame that, that are among your favorite you want to share with us?
Yeah, I don't know how many people remember. I believe it was 87. There was a new television series, and it was called Juarez.
I remember that.
Yeah. And the star was Benjamin Bratt. His name was Benjamin Banda. Then it was first. It was his first debut. ABC was going to air it, and we did the pilot and three episodes, but it didn't make it. It got canned.
Right.
But they did air the pilot. But during the production, it was in the winter, October through, actually they were here through January, it snowed. And the director didn't want snow.
He said, wait a second.
It snowed, yeah. And the director was Jeffrey Bloom. And the scene in the morning was on the International Bridge. He didn't want snow. And he asked me, would you please get the snow off the bridge? Okay. I'll see what I can do.
You got a bunch of people with shovels?
And at the time, City Hall didn't have a city manager, but they had, and some people will remember him, Dr. Beasley. And I went to him and gave him my sad story, and he put city crews on that bridge. And by 5 a.m., it was sparkling.
Amazing.
Sparkling clean. I'm not done. The director came and he said, thank you. It looks amazing, but I decided I wanted the snow back. Okay. They had to fly it in from California.
Right. A bunch of styrofoam. So you put the snow back.
Back. Yeah.
Amazing.
I know.
You know, the border has been an attraction for a lot of productions. It features anytime anybody needs a border, and sometimes it's not a full film, but just scenes in a film. I know years ago you were telling me the story and the challenges Day After Tomorrow, where there's a very short scene in that film of Americans migrating south to get away from this ice storm.
It was the most
storm.
Talked about shot in the movie.
Yeah, so you had to create an international situation.
Actually, we made history with that one because it had never been done before.
Tell us about crossing the border the other way.
Well, yeah, there were 1,200 extras. And, of course, obviously the challenge is, you know, the scene where they go into the Rio Grande and cross, which doesn't sound like a big deal until the director says, cut, let's reshoot. What do? They can't turn around and come back. So
because Border Patrol is worried that people might come with them?
Well, of course. And you can't just turn around and come back once you've crossed. So there was a lot of meetings over this. What are we going to do? How can we do this? Somebody suggested buses and have everybody on the bus and bring them. Well, that would take all day, 1,200 people. So the Pentagon got involved. And understand that this was on the cusp of the war in Iran, Iraq. And I was told by the Pentagon, if the war begins, this will be shut down. And it was like every day, what happened? Did anything happen? You know. So what they decided to do, what we all figured would work, was to put Border Patrol agents in as extras, in with the crowd, and that worked great. And they actually did catch people coming across. But I think it was the day after, tomorrow, that the war did start. But that's why the Pentagon was here. But it was amazing, and they told me this has never been done before.
Was that the most difficult thing you ever had to?
That was
pull
pretty.
Off?
That was pretty difficult. Because I didn't know at the time how we would get it accomplished. But I found out that there was a entertainment division in the Pentagon.
Of course.
And I called them and established a rapport with the guy, and he's still my friend today.
So with retirement looming next week, all this high-profile work you've done for so many years, how do you see yourself winding down? Are you going to stay somehow involved in the local film community?
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Watch the movies for
a while?
I'm
going to miss it.
Right.
You know, the excitement of seeing what you've been able to pull together for them, see it shot from behind the scenes is like nothing else, you know? And then you see it up on the screen and you know what you did, what you went through. To get that to happen is amazing.
Maybe we need to do a film screening series where you show some of those films and tell the behind-the-scenes stories. That would be fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The wall that they created where they put all these pictures on the wall on the Day After Tomorrow were missing people, supposedly, in the film. Everybody up there were our friends and the whole crew of the movie. And, you know, we had a lot of fun with that. Fort Bliss was absolutely amazing in that, in helping the soldiers that were extras in it. The equipment, the helicopters, the tanks, like nothing else.
Well, you have a lot of history in this town, and I for one, want to thank you for all you've done over the years for the film community here and bringing
it's
all
been
these
my
productions.
Pleasure. And like I said, I could never have done it without the support from the city, the county, and the locals. Oh, my gosh.
Everybody willing to dive right in.
Yeah. Well, I've had to jump through some hoops, but that's okay. I'd do it again tomorrow.
Well, sounds like you might be called back occasionally for advice. So thank you, Susie, for coming in today and talking to me.
Oh, Charles, my pleasure.
My guest today has been longtime El Paso Film Commissioner Susie Gaines. Gaines has served in this role for 33 years and will officially retire next week, handing over the film commissioner reins to Drew Mayer Oakes. The city will be hosting a special retirement celebration for Miss Gaines this coming Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. at the Plaza Theater. Drop by and show your appreciation in person. On Film's producer is Lauren Terrazas. Thanks today to Vasil Zabinal for engineering the show. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.